Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 2:32 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is February 9th, and I thought we'd kick off with commodities, because copper was up today about 16 cents, and it continues to extend its rebound. And I think there's a number of factors behind this, and some of them are from China, some from Australia. So China has signed this big natural gas deal with Russia. So that's going to support demand for steel. They're going to have to build a lot of pipeline. And then on top of that, China is also expanding its development of both wind and solar. So that's going to create a lot of demand for copper, because one of the primary reasons that copper goes up is because of the distributed nature of wind and solar in particular, because each one of those wind turbines and solar panels has to be connected to the other with wire and then hooked up to the grid. And then because they're usually kind of far away from population centers, then that's a lot of cabling as well. So that's also positive for copper. Then we have the announcement from Fortescue Metals that they're about to build the largest solar slash battery slash wind array in Australia. And that's a rather significant investment. So this share had a downside key reversal today. But that's less to do with the iron ore market than it is about these new spending plans. What I find rather interesting is that if we look at the weekly chart for Fortescue, then we had the big pop on the upside in 2019 and 20, big decline, big rebound from the 1,000-day moving average as well. Then let's contrast that with the Chinese iron ore price from Qingdao. And we have a very similar situation. Big advance, big decline, big rebound. Now, China's trying to talk down iron ore prices, but it's rather going to be rather difficult for them to do that when they're also increasing the amount of money that's being set aside for supporting the economy while also supporting the drive towards lower carbon emissions. And having signed this big gas deal with Russia, they're not achieving their goal of energy independence. In fact, they're signing up for greater dependence just from a more trusted partner, or at least they're substituting reliance on US exports for Russian exports. Well, they're also then also going to try and invest in something that will achieve energy independence. So then that will increase the demand for wind and for solar. But all of those wind farms, they require a lot of steel to get those things up and running. One thing also that I thought was particularly interesting today was Saipem, that the share has been pulling back really aggressively. And that's because they've had really a failed venture in trying to promote themselves as the builder of wind offshore wind terminals. So the share collapsed at the beginning of this month, and it moved to another new low in here today. And the drilling sector, particularly offshore drilling, is really going through a terrible time. And a significant number of these companies are going bust because the large companies aren't investing in the kind or investing the kind of capital required to develop offshore sites. Now, it's not like there isn't any oil out there. There's plenty of oil out there, but it's more expensive. So there, and particularly when we think about the expansion plans that ExxonMobil announced a couple of weeks ago, well, they're going to be concentrating any money they do spend on onshore. And they do anticipate increasing supply coming out of the Permian. But that's certainly not offshore. So when we then think about the oil services sector, well, there are both onshore and offshore suppliers within the index. But because the offshore companies are so close to going bust, then they represent a really rather small weighting within this ETF. So there's going to be demand for onshore expertise, less for offshore expertise. Well, it does also mean that some of the wind companies are probably going to have an opportunity to hire away a lot of the more experienced people in the offshore sector because they simply won't be able to make a living any longer from working for companies like Saipem or Seadrill. And we've seen that kind of thing happen in the drilling sector before. And oil prices, having pulled back yesterday, were in mildly positive territory again in here today. So this continues to be an uptrend, and the size of the downward dynamics we've seen so far are really modest compared with the kind of declines we saw, for example, in November or July. So we're still in an uptrend, and there's still the possibility that prices are going to get right up to test that $100 area. And that's despite the fact that we have a short-term overbought condition. But we're getting quite a bit of strength coming through right across the commodity complex. One of the exceptions, before we move into agriculturals, is natural gas. So we had the spike in prices right at the end of last month, and then a swift rebound in the subsequent few days. But the natural gas price has been coming straight back down again over the last week, and more temperate weather, particularly where I'm living in northern Texas, would probably be to blame for that. Prices were well below freezing last week and are back with a rather balmy, probably 17 or 18 degrees Celsius right now. So we're definitely getting more volatility in natural gas prices. And of course, lower prices, particularly relative to Europe, are going to encourage even more natural gas to be exported. So we're definitely seeing this wide differential between European and US gas prices persist, and that's certainly supporting the outlook for export terminals. So Cheniere Energy might be a little off its highs, but it's still in a really quite consistent uptrend overall. Then, in the agricultural sector, coffee prices broke on the upside. So, this is extending what's been a steep advance. But I really think that what we're seeing now in the commodity complex is potentially very significant from a long-term perspective. Arabica coffee has gone through these kinds of exceptional bull markets in the past, and it's a very large contract, so it tends to attract a lot of money and a lot of speculation. And every contract is about $96,000. It's traded in cents, and we're talking about a contract size of 37,500 pounds of coffee per contract. So as we look at this long-term price, we have this exceptionally lengthy range. And it probably represents the hard edge of where there's the potential for changing climate conditions to have a direct effect on commodity prices. And we can also then think about soybeans, because Latin America is a major supplier of soybeans. And the price has been jumping higher over the last few weeks, and we're right in the region of the highs from back in 2012. And again, this is an exceptionally lengthy range. So we had the big step higher in agricultural commodity prices in 2006 and 7, and now we're back testing those peaks. Now, some of that is about supply disruptions because of the pandemic, and particularly the movement of people and farm labor. But in Latin America, a lot of it is because of drought and because of frost. So that's obviously climate related and nothing to do with the pandemic. And if we see commodity prices breaking to new all-time highs. Well, that's going to exacerbate the fear about climate change, and it will also then encourage governments to make big decisions about where money should be spent, where taxes should be imposed, and obviously that is potentially beneficial for the renewable energy sector. And we're starting to see the solar ETF bouncing from the region of the trend mean, and the wind ETF doing the same thing. So there's at least the potential here that one sector experiencing a lot of upward pressure is going to put pressure on others. Now, when we think about the broader economy, well, one thing that's been quite clear is that some of the vaccine producers are the beneficiaries of the pandemic or have pulled back aggressively. So there's just simply not as much demand growth for their products because the Omicron variant hasn't been as severe. So Ryanair is now right back in the region of the peaks from back in 2017. And they came through with surprisingly optimistic views on air travel for the first half of this year. And we've also started to see that the airline sector is taking its cue from Boeing and bouncing from the recent lows and pushing potentially up now to pressure this sequence of lower rally highs. So this is quite encouraging. And if we see increasing demand for air traffic, well, then the kinds of companies that have servicing agreements for all those jet engines should also do well. So Rolls-Royce has held a sequence of higher reaction lows for the last 6 or 7 months and continues to firm from above the 100p level, but it remains I think, a clear recovery candidate, and particularly if air travel continues to recover. So we've definitely seen that companies like Moderna have pulled back in a very aggressive manner and almost completely unwound the big surge higher from early 2021. Now, the one thing that we have, or that these companies have in favor of them, is that their technology has been vindicated in the real world. So they're not going to have as much resistance to mRNA technology going forward as they've had in the past. So they have the potential to come through with more interesting solutions to intransigent problems. And the biotech ETF is beginning to firm now from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. So I think this is also looking more positive. We've definitely seen big declines coming through in a large number of growth-oriented sectors. And the IPO ETF is another one of those where it's beginning to firm from the region of the 200-day, excuse me, from the 1,000-day moving average. And having had such a very swift pullback, it's not at all unusual to see a rebound. And the first area of potential resistance is going to be somewhere in the region of the lows from early 2021 and the 200-day moving average. So that means it could rally by at least another 10 or even 15% before it runs into a potential area of resistance. And when we think about the Nasdaq, well, it was in positive territory today. I've got an in-the-money stop on my short. If it follows through on the upside tomorrow, I'll definitely be stopped out. I'm not all that far away from it right now. And we're definitely seeing more enthusiasm about the potential for a rebound. And 10-year yields were modestly lower in here today, certainly not in a dynamic manner. And in fact, as we approach the close, well off the lows. So this continues to look like a breakout that's being sustained. And ultimately, when we look at the potential for interest rate hikes, well, the longer term is that bond investors are predicting there will be interest rate hikes, and that there will be effective in curtailing inflation. But they might be so effective in curtailing inflation that they contribute to lower growth. And there's certainly the bet that the port problems that contributed to supply inelasticity for consumer goods are beginning to ease, and that there's so much money being poured into the semiconductors sector. And just between three companies, which would be Taiwan Semiconductor, Samsung Electronics, and Intel, they're spending $100 billion this year to increase supply. And the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index is also rebounding here from the region of the 200-day moving average. And Taiwan Semiconductor, having pulled back rather aggressively for a few weeks, is beginning to demonstrate some support coming back in. And it's been ranging for most of the last year. So this is an important area where support should start to come back in. If consumers are moving more back towards buying services rather than consumer goods, well, that might not be as positive for companies like Best Buy, but it's, I think, important to pay attention to what's happening with Amazon. So the share has unwound its short-term oversold condition, and now it's right back in the region of the lower side of the overhead trading range and the 200-day moving average. So we're at a rather pivotal point here. And if this is a recovery, well, then it will continue higher from here. But I suspect that we're going to get some consolidation. Following a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, it's not at all unusual to see a rebound and a period of right-hand extension and ranging. So I think that we have to at least be prepared for that potential outcome. But certainly, the commodity complex has been through a lengthy period of consolidation, and now, for example, the BlackRock World Mining Trust is breaking on the upside. But this is much more suggestive that it is cyclical sectors are doing better rather than the champions of the pandemic. And certainly, we've seen a lot more base formations either forming or being completed in the resources sector than we have in the technology sector overall. And gold prices were up again in here today. So, continuing to unwind the big decline that we saw over 2 days in January. But we need to see it sustain the move above 1850. There's a lot of people aren't at all convinced that this is a consolidation. And of course, the range, and it's a tight range, well, that's what it tells us, that there's a period of indecision because supply and demand are back in balance. But we have a clear succession of higher reaction lows, which suggests that gold is under accumulation. And when we look around the world with inflationary pressures that are forcing governments and central banks to assess their options, well, they are being forced to move around their currency positioning. And certainly some of the emerging markets are more aggressive in raising rates because they want to have a stronger currency overall. And Europe is beginning to allow the euro to appreciate versus the dollar. And we're in a period of currency competition. So there's a lot of movement going on in terms of interest rates and currency volatility. And a lot of it has to do with the outstanding debts, the worries about inflation getting out of control. Not so much that inflation, or that they want inflation to disappear, but rather that they'd be happier if it weren't making headlines. And against that background, gold is an anchor. There are at least it's a barometer against which we might measure the purchasing power of currencies. And with gold rising, it suggests that central banks might be talking a good game, but they're not really serious about eradicating inflation and that they would much rather erode the purchasing power of currency than do anything serious about containing inflationary pressures or government spending overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.